Last Saturday was both National Hunting and Fishing Day and National Public Lands Day, two subjects about which I've shared on past episodes. Honestly, I can't think of any place I could live in our country where these two days have more meaning, or should have more meaning. So much of what we do around Southwest Alaska is tied to both hunting and fishing, in all their various forms, and a lot of that hunting and fishing can and does happen on public lands, whether those lands are federal or state. I mean, I work for an office, an entity, Togiak Refuge, that's tasked with taking care of over 4.7 million acres of public land. So yeah, I do think the recognition of these two things may have, or I would argue should have, a greater significance to us than they do for some folks living elsewhere, though really they should be important to folks everywhere. Today I'd like to spend some time talking about both and also some things happening at the refuge office to celebrate both, even if it is a week late. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. I have railed on about a few topics in the past. No cotton clothing for outdoor ventures, always wear a life vest, never take for granted what we have here. Do any of those sound familiar? Using field notes is something of a soapbox, but okay with that because the topics I've chosen to use it as a soapbox for have all been tied to the outdoors and aligned with the principles of my employer. Two such topics, or related issues, are tied to what was celebrated last Saturday, and will be celebrated in a belated fashion tomorrow. I've said previously that I believe we are somewhat more insulated with where we are from issues and criticisms pertaining to hunting, fishing, and land access. But make no mistake, we are under some of the same pressures. Anything related to firearms, to include hunting, is under a great deal of scrutiny. Additionally, public lands have been in the news a lot in recent years and for different reasons, not all of them positive. While many of the specific issues are happening elsewhere in our country, many of these things can have a domino effect, and I think we sometimes don't consider where we're at in that chain, or the fact that we're in a chain at all. I was having a conversation online recently with a friend from Colorado. He and his wife decided that life wasn't what it should be, 3 years ago, living in his home state of South Carolina. So they up and moved to Colorado, just like that. They have enjoyed a much more satisfying outdoor lifestyle in Colorado, though lately he's been realizing something that should have been obvious. Colorado has a lot of people in it. He has joked in recent months that friends of his are welcome to visit, but that Colorado has decided it's full. They're not taking on any more new folks. Again, it's just him joking around, but he has a specific point to that joking. I have pointed out to him on a number of occasions that I don't deal with that here, nor do I really expect to over the course of the rest of my life. That said, the world isn't getting any smaller either, and that includes here. Again, we may feel a bit more insulated here, and I think that's exactly the right word, because we're still fairly cut off in many ways. We still have to get on a plane to go anywhere of significance. But the world is getting smaller. I've been in Dillingham over 16 years now. Not all that long really, but enough to know that I like it. When I moved here, there wasn't a bridge at Aleknagik, and the road to get there was still gravel. Now it's paved and the bridge is there. There have been discussions about a road to Manicotic. These may seem like small things, but they point in a very definite direction that shows even our part of the world is shrinking. By the way, that Colorado buddy of mine, he's rumbled to me about eventually moving to Alaska. I'm not saying all this to cast any such developments in a negative light, and I understand a bit of what I'm covering here today may be as much opinion as fact. The bridge across the Wood River, that's certainly been a good thing. I haven't heard anybody say anything negative about it. I only wish to point out that the world continues to change, and in a way that continues to reflect more the hand of man, and less so that of Mother Nature. In bringing this back around to the idea of hunting and fishing and land access via public lands, we should be exceedingly grateful for the hunting and fishing opportunities we have here, and the public lands we have access to on which to pursue those particular activities. Getting more specific, and starting with National Public Lands Day, that event is celebrated annually at public lands in the United States on a Saturday in late September, which happened to be the 22nd this year. It promotes both popular enjoyment of our country's public lands, as well as volunteer efforts on those lands to help keep them clean. Honestly, it's a much bigger thing in places with roads, as you'll see if you Google what happened across the nation last weekend. It's an event at which people turn out to work on projects that enhance and support public lands. National Public Lands Day began in 1994 at three sites and included some 700 volunteers. It proved to be a big success and became a yearly tradition. Since that first day, over 20 years ago, it's an event that's grown considerably. In fact, in recent years on this date, it's not uncommon for more than 175,000 volunteers and park visitors celebrate at more than 2,100 public land sites in all 50 states, the District of Columbia, and Puerto Rico. The other event, National Hunting and Fishing Day. I am of two minds on the idea of a National Hunting and Fishing Day. On one hand, it's a very cool idea to have a day that recognizes these two very fine pursuits, both of which are certainly uber critical to people around the Bristol Bay region, as well as being identified priorities for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, so there is that. On the other hand, a part of me feels like, really, a single day? Around here we have another name for the idea of a hunting and fishing day. It's called daily living. I don't know that a day goes by that I don't think about hunting in some capacity, even if I'm not participating. And I sure don't think I'm alone on that. Historically, a lot of folks like to trace the beginning of hunting and fishing and its place on our national consciousness of those two things, all the way back to President Theodore Roosevelt. That's understandable, considering what Roosevelt meant to conservation. But the official recognition for a day came quite a bit later. President Roosevelt was largely the guy behind the creation of our current refuge system, and he was an ardent conservationist as well as a rabid hunter. The day we celebrated last Saturday actually got started in the state of Pennsylvania. The first person to suggest an official day was a gun shop owner in that state, a Mr. Ira Joff. In 1970, Pennsylvania Governor Raymond Schaefer adopted Joff's idea and created what was billed as an Outdoor Sportsman's Day in the Keystone State. Less than a year later, Joint Resolution 117, authorizing National Hunting and Fishing Day, was introduced. On May 2, 1972, President Nixon signed the first proclamation of National Hunting and Fishing Day. By late summer, all 50 states had joined in. Today, National Hunting and Fishing Day continues to be celebrated towards the end of September annually. So, it's a week later for celebrating both in the year 2018. How does that affect you? Other than possibly making you feel like you missed out on something. It's simple. We're celebrating it a week late, due in part to a lot of folks with the refuge staff were out of town last week, and it's tough to put on an open house when no one's around. Better late than never, right? Here's the deal. Tomorrow, Saturday the 29th at the Refuge Office Building, which is located above the Bayside Diner in downtown Dillingham, we'll have an open house event. If you're in Dillingham, we'll be open to the public from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. We'll have a campfire going, in a fire pit for the sake of safety. We'll have hot dogs for you to cook, coffee available, and possibly some other drinks and snacks as well. We'll also have a number of demonstrations and activities. Some of the possibilities are fairly established, while a few others, well, at the time I'm putting this into the KDLG computer, are still coming together, so I can't give you a comprehensive list of what to expect. I am expecting we'll have our caribou shoot with a bow and arrow again. Also, a dart gun letting young and old shooters try to pop spruce grouse or nail a caribou to be collared will be on hand. There will be furs to see, animals to learn about, and public lands history to soak in. Some of the demonstrations that are being planned at this time are game meat processing, how to put together an antler mount, how to make a snare, and hand-loading rifle cartridges. There will be various gear displays, at least one photo op, and a few door prizes. There will also be a lot of good conversation to be had, both with the refuge staff and others in attendance. Oh, and did I mention free food and beverages? If you need a bit more motivation, consider this. The forecast is for a bit of wind, but sunshine and highs near 60. It kind of sounds like a great day to be out of the house, doesn't it? So, if you don't have anything going on tomorrow, stop by and visit with us. We'd love to see you. Stop at the farmer's market, maybe go to the store if you need to, pick up your mail, and then come on over to the Togiak Refuge office, and help us celebrate two very fine days of recognition, just a bit late. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.